Well, good day to colleagues joining us for which is the 12th teleclass of the 50 that will be broadcast in the 2013 series. These teleclasses are facilitated by Weber Training, the whole series of which this year are sponsored by patron sponsors Virox Technologies and the World Health Organization. It's my great pleasure today to introduce Dr. Dick Zoutman, who is the Chief of Staff at Quinty Healthcare Corporation and is also Emeritus Professor of Pathology and Molecular Medicine of Community Health and Epidemiology and of Medicine at Queen's University. He's a Fellow of the Royal College of Physicians of Canada and a certified specialist in internal medicine, infectious diseases and medical microbiology. A primary focus of his investigative work has been the use of modern quality improvement methods in the prevention and control of healthcare-associated infections, as well as new sterilization and disinfection methods. He will, of course, be familiar to many of you listening. He is past Physician Director of the Board of the Community and Hospital Infection Control Association of Canada, having served for 12 years in that role, and is now an honorary member of CHICA Canada. During the 2003 outbreak of SARS in Toronto, Dick chaired the Ontario SARS Scientific Advisory Committee, responsible for advising the Ontario government on management strategies of the SARS outbreak. As of 2004, Dick was appointed co-chair of the Ontario Provincial Infectious Diseases Advisory Committee. He is a fellow of the Centre for the Study of Democracy, and he has his black belt in Lean and Six Sigma for healthcare. The subject of today's teleclass is to provide an update on the use of non-touch disinfection systems, which will include ultraviolet light, hydrogen peroxide, and ozone. Dick, you are very welcome.
Thank you very much, Martin and Paul, for the invitation to speak to you today. When I reflect back on the last 10 years since the SARS outbreak, which is 10 years this month, lots of things have changed around the world, and the prominence that infection prevention and control, I think, has in everyone's mind in healthcare, politically and otherwise, is very gratifying indeed. I'm excited to talk to you about no-touch disinfection systems, and I'm going to go to the second slide and just declare my conflict of interest, which I'm pleased to have this conflict of interest because I am an inventor of one of the systems that is being presented, known as Aseptic Sure, and that is owned by MediZone International, and I'm their chief medical officer part-time as well. And want to just let you know, this is a very rapidly evolving field internationally. I've done my very best to collate information. Some of it is very difficult to come by, isn't all yet published, and I may not have included all of the technologies that are out there, so if anyone feels left out, I apologize in advance. But I will do my best to present the principles of the methodology so that we're all aware of where this exciting field is going. My objectives on slide 3 is that I hope that by the end of our time together, you'll know something about the two types of ultraviolet technologies and their differences, that you'll be able to describe the basis for hydrogen peroxide vapor and mist and how effective they are, what the limitations are, and we'll be able to describe how effective ozone-based methods are, and I hope to bring to your attention the synergy that we have learned about combining ozone and hydrogen peroxide is a novel way, finally, that you'll know what to look for and be an informed consumer of the information, perhaps of the technology itself, for the in vitro, in vivo, and clinical studies that are coming out in this very exciting and rapidly evolving field. On slide 4, then, I just wanted to let you know about the problem. Well, we all know what it is. That's why we're here this afternoon. We have too many healthcare infections, needless suffering, and mortality. And we've had significant innovations in disinfection and cleaning products. And I think, have finally all woken up to the fact that the environment is a major reservoir and importance in this. But what it appears to me is that we need a transformational technology to allow us to do better than just cleaning where the little fluorescent dots are in our healthcare environment, but to clean all of the surfaces. You know, while I subscribe to the notion of high-touch and non-high-touch surfaces, I do worry about the non-high-touch surfaces and all of the surfaces in healthcare and the contribution they make to the spread of infection. On the next slide, on number 5, the characteristics of an ideal room disinfection. What would you like to have? Well, I'd love to be able to have something that has a very high level of kill, something in the 6 log kill range of all the nasties we worry about, like Clostridium difficile, MRSA, and so forth, particularly against spores. It needs to be fast. Healthcare facilities are like airports. Time is of the essence. It needs to be simple to use, cost-effective, safely deployable, not leave any environmental residues, and reduce the incidence of healthcare infections by good clinical studies. And that it's supported in that way by high-quality scientific evidence. And that's where this area is still growing and evolving. On the next slide, number six, I want to just talk to you about the quality of evidence and what to look for. It's still a bit mixed in the literature, so you have to be highly critical. You do want to seek out peer-reviewed literature. There are lots of non-peer-reviewed literature out there, which is valuable and useful information to tell you what's going on. The types of studies that are being done are in vitro, where they're testing the various gases or what have you inside chambers, some of which look like glass tanks. They may put in their bacteria onto a steel disc or a coupon, load up the bacteria, expose it to the vapor in the mist, and then hopefully determine how many of those bacteria have been killed. Other surfaces that can be tested that way would be fabrics, carpets, plastics, different kinds of building finishes that are used in our facilities. You want to see in those studies that they've done lots of controls and lots of replicates. Our colleagues and friends, Dr. Springthorpe and Dr. Sitar, have developed the quantitative carrier test methods and standards that should be applied, and you want to look for that. You also want to ask yourself, well, did they test it in the presence of an organic soil load of some fashion, because we all know that that plays an important role, and recognize you need to have a spectrum of microbes that have been tested, because they all have their little surprising challenges that if you didn't test, you may not know about. On slide 7, with respect to testing then, that goes on in vivo in a living healthcare environment. There's been some work published on this. I'm going to go over it in more detail. You can do the testing in a hospital room, in a laboratory you're trying to decontaminate, and of course, a whole number of various field locations. You'd like to see random assignment of rooms and spaces, but all of you, I think, can appreciate the challenges of doing that in a living hospital where the rooms become available as they become available and may not be entirely random. You want to see that there's no overlap if you're comparing one method to the other, and that really between comparing methods that you've had a little time to go back to baseline in terms of methodology, sort of a washout period. You want to make sure that any reports of we cultured the surfaces of this, that, and another thing are done in a very standardized way. It is not as simple as it sounds. Just rubbing a swab over a surface is not sufficient. And so you want to make sure that it's being done in a highly reproducible way. And likewise, I believe that any commentary about we tested the system in the room should include loading these various stainless steel coupons in standard ways in the room as a supplement to also demonstrate that on those surfaces we were likewise at the same time able to eradicate the bacteria. And really, I look for, when I read a paper on this, what do they do about spores? Because we know those are the most difficult thing. You can get C. difficile spores to work with in a laboratory that are not disease-producing. You can use bacillus spores that are completely non-disease producing, and geobacillus and likewise. And that's what I like to see when I look at some of this in vivo testing. On slide 8, with respect to interpreting these results in the literature, you want to see the expression of the data, speaking as a microbiologist, as a log 10 kill, or perhaps the log 10 survivors. The kill is how many bugs did you throw on the surface, minus how many survived after the end, again recognizing that there's going to be controls and tests, and you express that as a log 10 kill. So if you're told that someone got a 6 log kill, that's a million-fold bacterial kill. That's a very high level of kill, whereas a 2 log kill is a low level kill. Generally, the means are done by geometric means, not by arithmetic means. It's a minor point. You need to see lots of replicates under any one set of conditions, as particularly for the in vitro test. Again, as I say about surface swabs, what kind of numbers are you looking for? Typical healthcare surfaces will have in the tens to hundreds of colony-forming units in a square centimeter. If you're getting into the thousands, that's pretty heavily contaminated. You can count both specific pathogens, like we found this many VRE MRSA, etc., or you can count all of the bacteria, including non-pathogens, known as a heterotrophic bacterial count. Ideally, you'd like to see both, but recognizing counting specific pathogens adds to the cost of doing the work. On slide 9, then, with respect to clinical studies, you want to see before and after studies that will cite reductions in infections. Random assignment of rooms is better, but much more difficult. Recognizing that hospital infections and infections in healthcare vary significantly over time, somewhat inexplicably, then you want to have a long enough period of observation so that any change that you see before and after is not just random chance. That's where randomization and multi-center studies would be ideal, and I don't think we're there yet. Very difficult and costly, and these would be combined with surface cultures and loaded coupons, and then the ultimate, which would be clinical outcomes to show that you've actually reduced infection rates in patients, which we have some early data now that we can talk about later on in my presentation. I'm on slide 10 now, and I'm thinking I'm going to talk to you now about the first range of technologies that that use ultraviolet light. I might take you back to little high school physics about ultraviolet light. Ultraviolet germicidal irradiation, specific wavelengths kill bacteria, and UV lights, UV wavelengths are broken down into UVA, B, and C ranges. The UVA is from 400 nanometers down to 315, B from 315 to 280, and UVC 280 to 200 nanometers. The entire UV spectrum will kill different microorganisms to some extent, but it's the high-energy ultraviolet C range ultraviolet light that has the most germicidal activity. The optimal wavelength is about 265 nanometers. And in page 11, you can see the susceptibility of the organisms in this chart taken from the ASHRAE Journal in August of 2008. And as you'd expect, vegetative bacteria are more susceptible than fungal or bacterial spores, and that's consistent with what we know about the susceptibility of these organisms to other modes of killing them as well. In terms of generating ultraviolet light, there are two broad areas of technology. One are the mercury vapor lamps. In mercury vapor lamps, mercury vapor is itself excited electrically, and that generates the UVC range of lights at around 253.7 nanometers. That's close to the peak range of around 260, 265. And it's a continuous on kind of light that's on continuously. That's typical for the mercury vapor lamps. On slide 13, I point out that xenon vapor lamps are a different technology. They're based on a xenon vapor in the lamp that is uses a pulse. In other words, there's a sharp pulse of electricity that goes through, resulting in a flash of light with a very broad spectrum of wavelengths between 200 and 320 in very brief millisecond pulses. It generates more UVC wavelengths this way, and the high intensity of the fast pulses are felt to give the pulsed xenon UV light perhaps a better ultraviolet disinfection potential. So here's an example from Lumiere, the TrueD unit you've probably read and heard about and seen displayed at meetings. It's a stand of lights with, there's a shroud to cover when you're not using it. It's continuously on as a mercury vapor lamp system. It's on wheels so you can conveniently move it around. Obviously it has to be plugged in. This TrueD system is an automated mobile unit. They have demonstrated about a 3-log kill of vegetative bacteria for things like MRSA, VRE, and Acinetobacter, and around a 2.5, perhaps 3-log kill of Clostridium difficile inoculated onto Formica surfaces in a contaminated patient room done by Dr. Rutala et al., published in Itchy in 2010. The TrueD light system has been studied for environmental contamination with vegetative bacteria, and there have been measurements using aerobic colony counts and C. difficile, again inoculated onto steel discs done by our friend and colleague Dr. Boyce, and room decontamination on slide 17 now with the TrueD UV system has been measured. They looked at reductions of aerobic bacteria on the five high-touch surfaces in this paper done by Dr. Boyce. They found that the mean C. difficile reductions were about 1.8 to 2.9 logs on the steel disc with a cycle time approaching about 100 minutes. Surfaces in the direct line of sight were significantly more likely to yield negative cultures after the exposure than before. So direct line of sight is very important for these technologies, obviously, because, as you know, light doesn't go around corners. Likewise, testing it on inoculated surfaces and using you can measure the dose of the ultraviolet light, in this case at 22,000 microwatts per second per square centimeter, for 45 minutes achieved a kill of C. diff spores and MRSA in the 2 to 3 log range per square centimeter, and better kill on VRE at about a 3 to 4 log reduction. And the same levels of kill for MRSA and VRE are achieved with a shorter exposure, 20 minutes, interesting, at a 12,000 microwatts, a slightly lower dose. But when you drop the dose, the C. difficile spores are killed, is reduced dramatically. And so the dose does matter, as does the distance and the time. And summarizing Naranzik data on slide 19, you can see that looking at the C. diff on the left side of the graph, you're getting about a 2 to 3 log reduction. The various MRSA strains in the middle, around a 3 log reduction, and VRE slightly better, between a 3 and 4 log reduction with the TrueD-based technology. On slide 20, Naranzik et al. In BMC infectious diseases also did some work looking at high-touch surfaces of a bathroom, and from the description of their paper, I calculated the surface area they were working on was about 60,000 square centimeters, or kind of that high-touch strip along the walls of a bathroom at chest height, where you would touch if you put your hands up to touch the wall, on all four sides of the wall. And they found that the C. diff spores were about 600 C. diff spores in that whole surface area before the TrueD light, and about 24 after MRSA, about 1,200 bacteria in that surface area, going down to 240 after the TrueD exposure, and VRE about 180 colony-forming units, and then entirely wiped out, again, reflecting its increased sensitivity. So again, you are still seeing residual bacteria on these surfaces. And when I see the residual MRSA, I get worried, because recently been shown, although I don't have this paper here, because it's very recent, that the regrowth rate, which we know is only 20 minutes, that in fact within 6 hours, the MRSA levels on a contaminated healthcare surface go back to what they were, in 6 hours. So it's you wonder how much of a kill do you really need achieve to keep the bugs away. On slide 21, you'll see an example of the Zenex version of pulsed xenon UV light, one of their instruments, very nicely engineered, very pretty looking device. The ultraviolet light goes down inside the device and looks easy to move and such, and then again, it's a pulse light. On slide 22, there's a reference here to an in vitro laboratory study where you can see for MRSA, VRE, and C. diff, the sort of holy trinity of nosocomial pathogens, the log 10 kills based on 8 minutes of pulsed exposure or 12 minutes of pulsed exposure. You can see for MRSA, 5 log kill, 4 log kill for VRE, and about a 4.5 log kill for Clostridium difficile. And if you push it up to 12 minutes, the C. difficile kill goes to 5.5 logs, looking somewhat more impressive than the previous mercury vapor lamp technology. I would note that the C. diff surfaces were only a meter away from the lamp, so they were quite close. and the MRSA and VRE were only 2 meters from the lab. The gain was fairly close. There were 9 samples for C. diff and 4 for MRSA VRE, kind of a small sample size, done by an independent testing lab as produced in some of the company's literature. On slide 23, the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston published an abstract with Dr. Stibich et al. From January to March 2010. They had 12 rooms that were extensively surface cultured for a problem they were having with VRE at the time. They cleaned their rooms with a germicide for 30 minutes and then did 3 by 4 minute exposures to the pulsed xenon lamp. Cultures were taken before the cleaning, after the cleaning, and then involved the xenon lamp. So it was quite interesting to see what the results are on slide 24. And as you can see in their paper here, the comparison one is before cleaning, you can see 33 colony-forming units per square centimeter. After the standard terminal clean, it brings it down to 27.4. Not very impressive. Interestingly, before cleaning again at 33 colony-forming units, you then apply the pulsed xenon light, you bring it down to 1.2, not 0, but 1.2 colony-forming units per square centimeter. This is the total heterotrophic plate count. These are all the bacteria. And interestingly, after the terminal, if you did it after the terminal clean, which really didn't do very much anyway, you get the same results. So it seems that, A, I learned from this, and I was a bit concerned that the manual terminal clean doesn't remove very much at all, and the UV light system does bring it down significantly in terms of heterotrophic plate count. On slide 25, I've got some information for you from the Cooley Dixon Hospital in Northampton, Massachusetts. They're a 140-bed acute facility, and they were having difficulties with Clostridium difficile. And so this is sort of a before and after design, which is always a bit difficult to interpret because my own experience with C. difficile, it comes and goes up and down. It's very difficult to predict what's going on there. But from January to September 2011, in an uncontrolled observational study, they used the Xenex pulsed ultraviolet system and pre-cleaned with chlorine bleach, which was their standard operating procedure. Obviously, if they're having worries about C. diff, that made sense. Their rates of C. diff for 2009 were not stated, but they were 0.95 per 1,000 patient days in 2010. And between 2008 and 2010, quarter 1 to 3, about 0.98 per 1,000 patient days. And then with the introduction of the pulsed ultraviolet light in the first three quarters of 2011, their rate went down to 0.32. And you can see in the graph on the left that the number of CDI deaths in the blue column and colectomies between 2009 and 2011 was significantly improved. So this is very interesting data. It's a before and after, and we all know C. diff comes and goes, so it's a little hard to interpret, but it's intriguing. So in summary, with respect to ultraviolet lights, there are two kinds. There's the ultraviolet in mercury bulbs and xenon bulbs. The xenons are a pulse. The exposure time to UV C lights is, you know, up around 100 minutes, whereas xenon pulse light would be in the 10-12 minute range, depending over multiple doses. The unit has to be moved to different areas of the room to allow line of sight exposure. The vegetative kill rate is approximately 3 to 4 logs for UVC mercury bulb lights, and maybe one notch higher, 4 to 5 logs for the xenon pulse light. And the C. difficile spore for the UVC lights is in the 2 to 3 log, whereas for the xenon pulse, it's somewhat higher, but I caution the data is still quite limited. Obviously, you cannot be in the room. The UV exposure is not safe for your eyes or your skin, so the room has to be vacated for all of these technologies we're going to talk about today. There's worry about the mercury bulbs generating some mercury vapor, not felt to be an issue with the xenon pulse. And we've seen some controlled trials with the UVC light with the xenon. That's still not there yet in the literature. The costs are speculative and difficult to come by, but they're in the $100,000 range for the device. I'm sure that's going to change as the marketplace becomes more competitive, and the lamps are $1,800 for the UVC light approximate, giving you 9,000 hours. And again, for all of these, it is the effect of line of sight, and that will be an interesting issue in terms of applying this into the complexities of our hospital environments. On slide 27, I want to talk to you about hydrogen peroxide technologies, there's several out there. BioQuell is well known. They produce a 30% hydrogen peroxide, or use a 30% hydrogen peroxide solution that generates a hydrogen peroxide vapor. Johnson & Johnson's Advanced Sterilization have produced Gloss Air using a 6% hydrogen peroxide, and it used to be known as Sterinus, but was acquired by Johnson & Johnson. And they generate a mist aerosol of hydrogen peroxide. And Steris has its own system, and there's a little error in this slide, and I do correct it later on. They've got a new system that uses 6% hydrogen peroxide as well as their VHP system that uses 35% hydrogen peroxide. So here on slide 28, you can see from the Steris website the Steris VHP 1000ED system. I get the impression it's may be replaced by a newer system, which is on slide 29, the BioGenie, which I saw for the first time at the HIS meeting in Liverpool in November of this past year. And this machine, very compact, is a hydrogen peroxide bottle that goes inside, delivers 6% hydrogen peroxide with silver ions believed to increase the bacterial kill. The liquid is known as hyproxyl, and they're demonstrating a 4-6 log kill. Now, these are big numbers for MRSA, E. coli, and Pseudomonas. I have not yet been able to find published data on the efficacy of this system. If someone can help me with that, that's great, but as of last night, I still wasn't able to find it. Claiming about a 3-hour cycle time, and I think the data that I'm quoting on bacterial kill is where the liquid itself is used in a test tube setting, not necessarily what the vapor itself is doing. I haven't been able to find that data myself yet on the BioGenie system. BioQuell, this is one of their instruments. They've been around for quite a while, have some of the most robust literature on hydrogen peroxide vapor, and they have a variety of different formats. It's based on 30% hydrogen peroxide, on slide 31 you can see the instruments produced by ASP Gloss Air 600 and the 400, and there's other versions not shown here from their that are on their website. The Gloss Air 600 is for larger surface areas, a larger instrument, and the Gloss Air 400, smaller, more portable instrument. With respect to the efficacy of these systems, Pottage reports an applied environmental microbiology recently. This is using the VHP Steris system, 30% hydrogen peroxide. You can see that bacterial kill with Geobacillus stearothermophilus, Bacillus atrophius, and Bacillus thuringiensis, very difficult spores to kill. You can see up to a 7 log kill for the Bacillus atrophius, even so for the Bacillus thuringiensis. Bacillus or Geobacillus stearothermophilus is known to be, you know, one of the really the toughest ones to kill, but they're seeing about a 5 log kill again with this product using a 30% hydrogen peroxide vapor. These systems, like many, would require that you seal air vents, turn off the HVAC system in the room. This is a photograph from STL Today, and you can see that as part of the procedure for these methods. This is actually getting easier and easier to do with better technology to allow you to seal air ducts, and shouldn't be rate limiting in this day and age. On slide 34, BioQuell has efficacy data for Clostridium difficile, hydrogen peroxide vapor decontamination of 5 high incidence CDI wards, published, looked at by Dr. Boyce et al., followed by hospital-wide decontamination of rooms that were vacated by patients with CDI. They saw that 25% of the cultures from the surfaces before the hydrogen peroxide vapor did yield C. difficile compared to zero of the cultures after. That's significant, recognizing that you have to use great care to do these surface cultures, but they used sponges and other techniques that give you, you know, a good pickup. So these are interesting results. And during this 9-month intervention period on the 5 high incidence wards of C. difficile, the rate dropped from 2.2 per 1,000 patient days to 1.28. Those are pretty high rates. And the hospital-wide incidence fell from 1.89 to 0.88 per 1,000 patient days during the high incidence months. They had high rates to start with, very worrisome high rates, so I can see why they were motivated to want to use these methods. And certainly these results are very intriguing and very interesting. Just knowing that C. difficile rates vary with time is the one concern. BioQuell versus MRSA, again, French et al. Looked at this in the Journal of Hospital Infection, where they looked at 359 swabs, 3/4 of them taken before cleaning, yielded MRSA. That's pretty high. After the cleaning, all areas remained contaminated, interestingly, and disappointingly, with 66% of the swabs yielding MRSA still. After treatment of six rooms with hydrogen peroxide vapor using the BioQuell system, only one of 85 of the swabs showed MRSA, which is very intriguing. However, I would note the smaller sample size after the exposure. It was a 5-hour cycle time using the 30% hydrogen peroxide, generating hydrogen peroxide levels around 500 parts per million, which is a very high level of hydrogen peroxide vapor. Very interesting clinical study published in the Clinical Infectious Diseases this year by Passeretti et al. From Johns Hopkins. And in this study, I'll just let you know that they used this in the BioQuell system in the Johns Hopkins Hospital, a very large teaching hospital, tertiary center. And I won't take you through all of the details. You can read it on your own, but I'd draw your attention on slide 37 to the gray boxes, and you can see that they were looking for MRSA, VRE, and C. difficile, and you can see that 7.6% of patients acquired a multi-drug resistant organism, one of those three, MRSA, VRE, or gram-negative bacillus that was resistant like an ESBL or a C. diff, one of those four. So that's the base rate, about 7.6%, which is about what we all seem to experience. And if you go to the lower left side of the slide, you'd see that 10.6 acquired an MDR organism. These were the rooms that where the cleaning, they used standard cleaning procedures, compared to 4.1% acquired it in the rooms treated with the hydrogen peroxide vapor. So you go from a baseline of around 7% down to 4.1% by using the BioQuell system in those specific rooms, which is, again, I think, very interesting and intriguing data. Their process took around 1.5 to 3 hours per room. However, the only reduction in MDRO, meaning multi-drug resistant organisms, was actually the VRE. It worked well for VRE. They were 5 times less likely in the hydrogen peroxide rooms. However, there was no statistically significant reduction in the others, meaning MRSA, C. diff, or the multi-drug resistant gram-negative bacilli. So the reductions in the overall were really accounted for by reductions in VRE alone, which, they also had somewhat lower rates of C. diff and gram-negative resistant organisms, and so VRE reflected what they were seeing in the hospital at the time. So any future clinical studies, you'd like to have, unfortunately, an environment that has a lot of C. diff and a lot of MRSA to prove your point. Further on with this study, 21% of the 1,000 patient rooms sampled were contaminated with at least one of these organisms, again, most of it being VRE. And they did demonstrate reduced bacterial counts and contamination rates. The rooms in rooms contaminated with multiple resistant organisms, or rooms that were cultured, or bacteria cultured from rooms that differed from the room occupant's known MDRO, that is the patient MRSA in the room had VRE, and in multi-drug resistant organisms cultured from empty rooms, the significance of which isn't clear to me. But did not individually, again, for MRSA, VRE, C. diff, or gram-negative, the saliva-containing rooms, but the frequency of these was low. Mostly VRE, 64% of rooms during the hydrogen peroxide vapor intervention. And they did have some issues with the environment with the 35% hydrogen peroxide. The one brand of paint on the walls was giving them difficulties with exposure, and they had to switch out brands of paint, but that did resolve the problem. Sterinus on slide 40, which is now known as Gloss Air, was a study done in Turkey. It was Sterinus at the time. They used steel discs that were inoculated and placed in many locations into a 53-meter square room, a moderately small room. These were inoculated with MRSA and Acinetobacter baumannii, and they applied the Sterinus, now Gloss Air hydrogen peroxide mist, on 2.5-hour cycles. And you can see here that comparing the activity of this, that pure MRSA suspension carrying discs, they did have some where they used the barrier where there were different types of barriers or plates that were covered with petri dish lids, actually, to see if they could block the effect. And you can see that in the presence of a barrier, compared to in the absence of a barrier, you got some different, less kill, but you got about a 4.7 log kill for MRSA, 4.67 for Acinetobacter, 4.4 for MRSA, and Acinetobacter with serum. And you can see again that once they, if they put the lid on the discs, they got less effect. Well, that's kind of obvious, but does tell me that the system was generating around a 4 log kill, including with organic soil. Now, head-to-head trials would always be interesting and provocative, and this is an interesting one by Havel et al., published in May of 2012 in Infection Control and Hospital Epidemiology. This was comparing the TrueD ultraviolet light versus BioQuell, sort of a head-to-head. This is in a 500-bed acute hospital. They had 15 patient rooms that were selected at random from 8 different units. They selected 5 high-touch surfaces, which were cultured for the total aerobic colony count, the total number of bacteria. They also put steel discs loaded with 10 to the 6 C. diff spores in 5 areas close to these high-touch surfaces. And they also included biological indicator strips of Geobacillus steatothermophilus at 10 to the 4 and 10 to the 6, because you can buy them either way. Very interesting results on this study. The HPV BioQuell demonstrated 93% success in generating negative colony counts on the surfaces of interest and demonstrated a 6 log kill of Clostridium difficile. That's impressive. And a 99 to 100% kill of the biological indicators. And this was a cycle time approximately of 3 hours using the BioQuell system. The UV system, the TrueD system, however, didn't fare quite as well. There was a 50% reduction in the total colony counts that were negative, less than a 2-log kill of Clostridium difficile. Only no more than 22% of the biological indicators were killed, with a cycle time of approximately 1.6 to 1.7 hours with the UVC. So BioQuell, the 35% hydrogen peroxide, using 3-hour cycles certainly was superior in this study. Hardy et al. Has also talked about hydrogen peroxide usage, and I just want to draw your attention to the right side of the graph on page 42, that after using hydrogen peroxide, that MRSA colony counts go up rapidly afterwards, and so we know that bacteria have a doubling time measured, you know, in half an hour or something, so it's not a surprise that after using these systems, that if all the bacteria are not wiped out, that the pathogens will just regrow. particularly the vegetative ones. And that's a cause for pause in thinking about the best way to deploy these systems. So on slide 43, I want to compare hydrogen peroxide systems for you as best as I can. It's not entirely complete, but I can say that hydrogen peroxide with the Glossaire system at 6%, the Steris system at 35%, and then the newer version of the similar product from Steris, Biogenie, at 6%, and then Bioquell at 35%. Again, the technical people will argue hard about whether you're generating a vapor or a mist, and so I've indicated which is produced here. I've tried to get some data on the concentrations of hydrogen peroxide vapor. Again, if you use 35% hydrogen peroxide, you're generating 500 parts per million. If you're using about 6%, you're getting about 50 to 80 parts per million, as best I can tell from the literature that's available. The cycle times are all in the 2 to 3 hours, sometimes longer, up to 4 or 5 hours, depending on the space and the nature of what you're trying to accomplish. Certainly, Bioquell, I think, unquestionably has demonstrated a 6-log kill for C. diff and 6-log kill for various other BIs like Bacillus and Geobacillus. I could not find data for Biogenie on C. difficile, but there is evidence of a 5 to 6 log kill for some Bacillus strains, and likewise with its earlier predecessor from Steris, the VHP system. The Glossaire system, I'm seeing literature around a 2-3 log kill for C. difficile. Again, controlled trials are difficult to come by in this area, a little bit for the Glossaire system. And Bioquell has a recent paper from Johns Hopkins and other more robust clinical data. And the cost data is highly speculative, a capital investment in the $40,000 to $50,000 range perhaps. The cost to treat a room is difficult to come by, but it's fairly reasonable. Hydrogen peroxide isn't that expensive, so you may be in the $50 to $100 range per room or something along those lines. Well, let me turn your attention to slide number 44 in the last part of the talk, and I want to talk to you about ozone as an antibacterial. Ozone has been studied for decades and has been known to have good antibacterial properties. It's certainly used in commercial water systems, swimming pools, hot tubs, and the like. As a system to non-touch in healthcare settings, it is starting to show up. You can see here on this table for reference the types of bacterial kill just using ozone by itself. With certainly humidity is important, but you can see 3 to 4 log kills certainly worth looking at in this paper by Sharma and Hudson, that ozone gas alone does have antibacterial properties, but the levels of ozone used in these kind of studies is really very, very high, hundreds of parts per million. On the next slide, 45, however, part of the work that we have done that is really quite astonishes me anyway is the fact that ozone and hydrogen peroxide work together synergistically. Our own antibodies have been shown to, when they attach to a bacteria or other germs, they produce hydrogen peroxide and ozone, and Mother Nature is just too efficient. It doesn't do this for no good reason. The amount of hydrogen peroxide and ozone produced by our own antibodies is very low. However, it has been shown by Nilefer, Wentworth, and Lerner from the Scripps Research Institute at Oxford University through some very elegant chemical work that the combination of hydrogen peroxide and ozone, each individually not being profoundly active at those levels, generates a new molecule called trioxidane. That's H2O3, and it is extremely reactive intermediary molecule and is highly lethal to microorganisms in minute amounts and very, very rapidly. On slide 46, then, the concept here is that ozone and hydrogen peroxide, each by themselves, while they do have some kill, but at very low concentrations, do not. But when you combine the two, even at low concentrations, you generate quite an extraordinary kill, and this is the theoretical basis behind the technology I have the privilege of working on with Aseptic Sure. What we did on slide 47 is we followed along what's already been done. We used steal coupons, loaded them up with MRSA, VRE, C. difficile, E. coli, Pseudomonas, Mycobacterium, Terrier, et cetera, and would expose them first in a chamber and then in a test room when we were able to generate the gas, and using the QTC2 standards, were able to demonstrate significant bacterial kill. On slide 48, you can see our original test chamber set up, a polycarbonate chamber fully instrumented to measure all of the gases and flow, computer controlled. And we started working with MRSA initially and moved on to test the other range of bacteria that I'll tell you about. On slide 49, after it was working in the chamber, we thought, well, we need to see if we can test this in a room setting. So in our laboratory in the industrial research park that we're working in, we used the room and sealed it off with plastic, as you can see. The instrument in the middle, it was lovingly known as Frankenstein. We used an ozone generator with an oxygen tank. We no longer use an oxygen tank. We use room air. We generated hydrogen peroxide with the external vaporizer, and you can see the two round white units known as scrubbers, which help to destruct the gases at the end of the cycle time. And then in selected areas indicated with the red circles, we would have the test discs located with the MRSA and the C. diff and such throughout the room. This is about an 83-square-meter room, and we've had to move rooms several times throughout the facilities, and it works every time. And these are the sorts of results that we've demonstrated with aseptic SURE: MRSA, VRE, E. coli, Salmonella, Typhimurium, Pseudomonas, Listeria, Monocytogenes, C. difficile spores, Bacillus subtilis spores, Mycobacterium, Terrier, for example. We generate ozone at a very low level, 80 parts per million, as opposed to 800 or 1,000 parts per million that would be needed to get any bacterial kill with ozone by itself. So a very low level of ozone by itself would not have any appreciable effect. The level of hydrogen peroxide is not 30% nor 6%. We use 1%, a very low level of hydrogen peroxide. And that's the beauty of the aseptic SURE system, is because of the synergy. Our exposure time for the bacteria on the discs to the pathogens can be as short as 15 minutes. For C. difficile, better done at 30 minutes. Likewise for Bacillus and Mycobacterium Terrier. However, as you can see on slide 50, the microbial kill rate is at least 6 log reduction across the board uniformly, both in a test chamber environment and in the test room environment, repeatedly over and over again. We've also tested different types of surfaces, as indicated on slide 51, stainless steel, plastic from toilet seats, laminates, carpets, both cotton and synthetic cloth, hospital privacy curtains, for example, have been tested, and we do it with or without organic soil load, getting the same level of kill each time, about 6 log to 7 log. So the aseptic SURE system has been an interesting demonstration of a new way of doing things, using ozone and hydrogen peroxide together for high-level disinfection of clinical spaces and surfaces. There's a remarkable synergy going on there between ozone and hydrogen peroxide, generating trioxidane. It's extremely fast and very broad spectrum, very high level of disinfection across different room environments. We've used it in different hospital environments now, getting the same results. The gas, of course, goes everywhere. You don't have any line of sight issues. The low doses of ozone and hydrogen peroxide mean that it's very quick, doesn't demonstrate damage to painted surfaces or biomedical equipment and such, and we have found it to be remarkably robust and reliable. We're estimating the capital cost will be around $95,000 to $100,000, and the treatment cost per room will be in the $10 to $20 range. On slide 53, I just draw your attention, if you want to read further about this technique, published in the American Journal of Infection Control in December 2011. We'll give you lots of data to look at your leisure. And on slide 54, just a picture of the aseptic SURE system, so you can see what it looks like. That's our technologist Kelly back there. You can see the new units that are computer-operated, handheld device is outside of the room. They're radio-controlled generates the gases, and the white scrubbing units destruct the gases very efficiently. So, back to the original question. What are the characteristics of the ideal room disinfection system? Well, you want to have the highest possible kill of relevant organisms, particularly C. difficile spores. I believe that because bacteria will regrow on surfaces, if you only get a partial kill, that is, say, a 2 or 3, even a 4-log kill, there's still going to be pathogens left behind. And given the growth rate, in 6 hours of MRSA, you're back to where you started. To me, it makes the most sense to have a 6-log reduction, which is something that's not easy to generate, except that I think BioQuell is there with 35% hydrogen peroxide and aseptic sure at 6-log with hydrogen peroxide and ozone combination. Hospitals are like airports. It has to be done fast. There's very little done better in a hospital that's done slowly, and likewise with cleaning. So with these systems, you could probably get away with a good basic clean with a basic cleaner and then apply a good quality room no-touch disinfection system to be pragmatic and practical in a busy hospital environment. I think the technology will work in our favor in terms of these systems being simple to perform and cost-effective. Certainly the low-dose hydrogen peroxide and ozone generated from room air is very cost-effective, and the higher the concentrations of starting product, of course, the cost will go up. Safety is important with these systems. They need to have fail-safes, room door lockouts, so that if somebody does walk in accidentally, the ultraviolet lights shut down, that the gas-generating systems for hydrogen peroxide, vapor, ozone, or otherwise shut down, and that's an important thing to look for. Most, I would say that these systems are all similar, that there's not felt to be environmental residues, and that's desirable. And we are now at a stage when these can be deployed in clinical studies. Some of that is starting to happen to demonstrate reduction in healthcare infections. Although, if the data is compelling for bacterial kill, and we know those bacteria contribute to infections, some would argue, how much of that kind of data we're actually going to need. But no matter what we do have to have very good supportive scientific evidence for any and all of these systems. The final result, I hope, is a room that's fresh and clean and safe, and for our families and our patients, something that is long overdue, so that we can really be able to promise those who come to us for care that they can have a safe and infection-free environment. And with that, Martin, I will stop here, and thank you very much for allowing me to do this teleclass with you today.
Thank you very much indeed, Dick. That was an extremely comprehensive update, and there was lots of very helpful advice on how to assess the effectiveness and all these new technologies, which I'm sure many of us are looking at in our everyday practice. I suppose part of our problem is that after we've cleaned an area and decontaminated, unfortunately, we do have to readmit patients to it, and that's something I don't think we're ever going to get around. As you say, some of the information in this field is quite hard to come by, and I would urge anybody working in this field to publish their data, so that practitioners can make better and more informed choices when considering the use of these technologies, because this is still a very emerging field. If anybody has any questions for Dick, please feel free to email me. My email address is on the first page of the presentation, and I'll be delighted to forward them on to Dick. We very much hope you've enjoyed the 12th teleclass in the 2013 series of teleclasses facilitated by Paul Weber at Weber Training. And we'd like again to give our thanks to the series patron sponsors, who are Virox Technologies and the World Health Organization. I urge you to have a look at the upcoming sessions that are listed on the telecast schedule on the website, the next few of which can be seen on slide 58, where there's some extremely eminent speakers and some highly relevant topics that are coming up over the next month or so. It only remains me to thank Dick again for this tremendous presentation, and to wish you all a very good day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.